Today we have the 15th of September 2017, and I have a very privileged moment to share with you because you have been appearing on stage as the keynote speaker for the opening of the DECON Festival 2017. But in the same time, when you delivered your speech, you did something else than just blowing the horn for SAP. You made clear that life of a company is something like a trilogy in entertainment. Just give us a little more insight, but before that, just present yourself, Sam.
Well, thanks for hosting. My name is Sam Yen, Chief Design Officer for SAP, also a Managing Director for SAP in Silicon Valley. And that's a privilege for me because I grew up in San Francisco. So it's an honor to represent SAP for basically my home area.
And this is not only Silicon Valley, but it's the stronghold of entertainment. And I just learned from you that you have been invited to give another speech to Disney Company, and you had prepared a very interesting scheme or even metaphor to make them understand about their own company history. What was that?
Yeah, it was a concept. Something came up and I couldn't deliver the speech. But the concept was the notion of a trilogy as a storytelling technique for structuring the talk. I was just thinking, you know, Disney, obviously they make a lot of movies, and Star Wars was one of the things that I grew up with, really, really like and passionate about, like a lot of other people. But Star Wars is a very, very classic trilogy. There was also something in terms of the second part of what I was going to talk about, which was using an example of sports, because Disney also owns ESPN, which is a sports network in the U.S. And in that case, in basketball in the U.S., there was also a trilogy. The last three championships were actually played by the same two teams. And then I was going to talk about the notion of a trilogy in an organization and an industry perspective as well. But the basic concept was, you know, let's use Star Wars as an example. The first act of a trilogy is your basic, you know, Joseph Campbell hero's journey. You're introduced to a reluctant hero who has to go through many, many struggles, ultimately is able to overcome those struggles and saves the day. There's more to it than that. That's the basic first act. And the second act, something happens. There's a disruption that happens, which puts everything that the hero accomplished in the first act in question. And you go through that story, and at the end of the second act, there's a lot of question. You don't know what's going to happen. You're in the balance. Things can either go positive or they could go negative. In a lot of cases, it ends, you know, with a negative tinge to it, right? And it's the third act where you have to resolve that. You know, the hero has to step up and restore order to the universe, right? So I'm oversimplifying it, of course, but that's the general concept. So what I was going to do is I was going to use the Star Wars example to set up that framework. I was going to reinforce it with the National Basketball Association. You know, again, I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area, and our team is the Warriors. So we won the first game of the trilogy, and then the Cleveland Cavaliers won the second game. The second year, past year, the Warriors was able to overcome the disruption and win the championship again. But it's a great metaphor also for what organizations are going through today, right? We talk about this notion of digital transformation, which is the amazing advances in technology that enables businesses to do things that they were never able to do before in terms of consumer experience, new business models. We know the examples. But, you know, that notion of the trilogy is the same thing when it comes to organizations today. At some point, all of these global organizations were startups. They went through a hero's journey and they became successful as an organization. And what's happening right now in the second act is there's a disruption, right? Technology has changed. Startups, in a lot of cases, are able to leverage the new technologies and offer experiences to consumers in a new way. And right now, most companies, no matter what industry you're talking about, is, you know, they're at that point between the second act and the third act of the trilogy, and they have to figure out, what are they going to do? You know, are they going to be overcome, or are they going to transform themselves and take advantage of the new capabilities, create an innovation culture to be able to survive and have a happy ending? So anyway, that was the concept.
I referred to the speech, and it was interesting to hear and to see, actually, that you made clear that this kind of voyage, this kind of turmoil, this kind of challenge is not an easy one, because it's not just sufficient to have a great leader putting you into an extra room and saying, okay, just start something extra. We give you an extra room called design thinking. You even said the extra room for design thinking was some of the big mistakes you made. Why?
So in my role as managing director of Silicon Valley, we get a lot of companies usually that are coming from different parts of the world to come to Silicon Valley because a lot of the disruptions, especially in technology industry, are happening in Silicon Valley. You know, whether it's Tesla and electronic cars, or Airbnb in the hospitality industry, or even Apple way back when with digital music distribution and things like that. Right. So they come so often that there's a term that we use in Silicon Valley. We call it an innovation safari. You know, you come to Silicon Valley and your safari tour is to see all these disruptors. But sometimes organizations will see something and they'll take that idea and they'll try to bring it back and implement it without understanding the full context. You know, one of the things that a lot of organizations see is more innovative workspaces. And they think, oh, that's easy. We could do this. You know, we have a facilities organization. We'll take a lot of pictures, give these pictures to our facilities organizations, and then we'll have great workspaces and mistakenly assume a more creative, collaborative workspace is automatically going to change the culture. And what people don't understand is there's a lot of work that has to go on before that. You have to figure out the right people in the organization, the right processes, the right mindset, and that takes a lot of time to develop. And once you have that, then having the ecosystem, the space, to support that will amplify the things that you're trying to develop. But you can't just start with the space and expect the space to change everything else. I was giving an example, actually, that was a mistake that we did at SAP years ago, where we did the same thing. But we didn't change even the entire work environment. We limited the innovation space into rooms, which we call design thinking rooms. And I think that was a big mistake because it really sent the wrong message. You know, instead of taking a concept like design thinking and saying that this is how we should work in everything that we do, people got the message that if I go into this room, this is the time when I could be creative. And when I leave this room, I go back to my old work, right? And it even got to the point where I wasn't able to book the design thinking space, so we skipped that part of the process. So, you know, good concepts can go poorly if you don't understand the context behind the concepts. And that was just a failure of execution that I shared yesterday.
But you made it clear that you need this ride to overcome these challenges and to become competitive in this new area, right?
Yeah, one of the quotes that I shared was from Forbes magazine, and they did a survey of CEOs, and I think over 70% of CEOs felt that the next 3 years are going to be more critical than the last 50 years, you know, for their company, for their particular industry. So what that means is everybody's panicked, right? They understand, they see the disruption, and they don't have a lot of time to do it. And when they go to see these innovation safaris and they see what they need to do, they tremendously underestimate what it takes culturally in their organizations to do that change. They think that the change could happen, you know, you go through a checklist and overnight you're going to have a creative culture within your organization. And what we've seen at SAP is it took years. Luckily, we have a very visionary founder and he's still active in the company as the chairman of the company who, you know, has over the history of SAP really seen the need, you know, has been able to read, you know, the changing trends in the marketplace and has given us a sense of urgency to pivot when we've needed to in our history. But even that, you know, it's taken us a while to bring a concept like design thinking and spread it across such a global organization. And I think most organizations just completely underestimate how long it's going to take to do that.
And during your talk, you gave a second quote from a German author and thinker, Schopenhauer. Can you just repeat that and contemplate on that again?
Yeah, I'll set the context as well, right? I usually ask audiences if they've heard about design thinking. And at this point, design thinking is pretty mainstream, right? So most audience members will raise their hand. But when I ask people if they could define what it means, you know, sometimes I'll hear things like it's about, you know, creative problem solving. And creative problem solving is part of design thinking. But I always say, you know, at least for me, people could have different perspectives on this. But for me, the most important insight about design thinking is it's actually about finding the right problem before you do your creative problem solving, taking a human-centered methodology to understand who your user is and explore what are the unmet needs of the user and define that problem through a point of view very clearly, as Hasso also talked about. So I think that's the, you know, the real key insight of design thinking. And the quote was, talent hits a target that no one else can hit, but genius hits a target that no one else could see. So for me, that really brings home the point that it's about finding the right problem to solve in the first place.
I'm not going to challenge you to speak about the future of design thinking, but if we come back to your model of this trilogy, design thinking is still in the first phase, right?
Design thinking has come a long way. We're here to celebrate the 10th year anniversary of design thinking here in Potsdam. But if you think about design thinking as a term that's been talked about in industry, it actually started at Stanford in the 60s even. It's been, what, 40, 50 years already. Some would argue that, you know, even though it wasn't called design thinking, this has been practiced even longer than that. I don't think, you know, we're at the first chapter. It's already evolved a lot, right? It's gone from a practice within the design community And over the last 10 years, it's really crossed over into mainstream business. I think that's the biggest change that I've seen. Business people find value in design thinking, especially as technology is driving the need to change to stay ahead of things. Notion of an innovation very, very quickly is what's driving a lot of what CEOs need these days. And design thinking is actually very well suited as a way to bring kind of that culture of innovation into organizations.
So there's a third quote I have in mind. I think 2 years ago, it was said that the most intriguing ideas for the future is not going to be the B school, that means the business school, but the D school. Do you sign this statement?
One of my key messages, it's not either or, but it's a combination of the two. I used an equation, which was innovation is equal to creativity times execution. And to me, you know, roughly, you could think of execution as what you learn in business school, right? You know, how do you optimize an organization to execute, to achieve, you know, that great result? You need execution. You can't have it. But, you know, when you need to innovate, you also need disruptive, big ideas as well. Right. And I think that's what the D school helps you do. You know, finding the right problem to solve is often what leads to those breakthrough types of ideas. So I think it's a combination. So it's going to be D schools and B schools. And what you're going to see is it's going to be merging closer and closer together. I am most familiar with Stanford because I'm affiliated with Stanford. So I see the business school and the business school students are bringing more and more design thinking concepts into what they teach their students. And I think ultimately that's what Hasso Plattner, I think that's what he believes as well. You know, that's why he's invested in education. I think he feels that there's a lot, you know, academic institutions are very, very good at teaching business strategy. They're very good at teaching technical capabilities. But that notion of creative confidence, right? Individual creative confidence and being able to take that individual creative confidence into organizations. I think he felt that, you know, this is something that leaders coming out of school really need for the future.
Without talking too much about the future, just another idea. After the B school and the D school, maybe we're going to have an E school because we have real-time technology on the number crunches. We have artificial intelligence, which is getting very close to our mental facilities. And we have a new concept of thinking, meaning employing the qualified intelligence of data. All these three subjects may be the ground for another jump or another disruption into our future.
What would the E stand for in this case?
Like the e-car, like the e-government, like the e-health, and maybe even like the e-human facilities.
Yeah, I have to think about that one. If I were to think a little bit about the future, it's the notion of the school itself, I think, is going to dramatically change. You know, I think the subjects will always evolve. I do agree that most people, especially going into business, are going to have to be more digitally literate in everything that they do. So I agree with you there. But I also think, you know, if you think about the pace of change, this notion of going to an academic institute or a college for 4 or 5 years and learning enough to last a career that spans 40, 50 years isn't going to cut it anymore. You learn ways of thinking, and I think that's what academic institutes also always claim as, you know, the real reason, the real value that they bring. But I think of learning differently going forward. There's going to just be multiple ways of learning. There was a project that Stanford did a couple years ago called Stanford 2025. It was really the D school at Stanford taking a design thinking approach to rethinking what the university of the future might look like. And I just remember one of the concepts that resonated with me was this notion of an open loop university. You know, the notion that, hey, maybe instead of going to school for 4 contiguous years, if you get accepted into a university, you have the opportunity to be at the university for 6 to 10 years, but not at the same time, over the course of your life. So you could go for a couple years, go off into industry, work for 3 or 4 years, maybe come back for another year, and repeat that cycle so that learning becomes a lifelong learning concept as opposed to just something that you do in the 4 years when you're at a school.
I have still further questions in mind, even more tricky, so I will drop them. But instead of that, I'm just going to ask you a last very simple question. Maybe you're going to think a little about that as well. Imagine a question which I haven't asked, but you would have liked to answer. What should this question be, and how would be your answer to that question?
You know, maybe the questions that I wrestle with, especially in my industry, is, you know, what does the future of work look like? With technology advances, and especially in my role as the head of design for SAP, you know, I think part of my job is to understand ultimately how technology interfaces with with humans, with employees, with end consumers. So I always felt that my role was to humanize technology. Yesterday, I used the quote from Doug Engelbart. It wasn't an exact quote, but it was a paraphrase. And the concept of technology not replacing humans, but amplifying human capabilities. That's a question. I think everybody that works in technology is pushing technology and continuously advancing technology. The big philosophical question is, you know, how do humans and technologies co-work together, collaborate, right? Co-work in the future, and making sure that we do think of that as we're doing our technology advancements and not lose fact of the human aspect of that.
So thank you very much for that insight. And speaking about the philosophy, maybe you have a good ground and background here in Germany to even elaborate on this a little on another occasion. Thank you for your frank and honest answers.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.